Yes, g'day all. It is Thursday, April 18, the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. A very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. Loz will be back tomorrow. Blocker will be in to preview the round in the NRL as well after 7 o'clock. And in all morning is Josh Reynolds. Grubby, a very good morning to you, mate. Gee, you're here, there, and everywhere. NRL 360 last night. Matty John show, and here you are on the quick backup once again.
Well, all it is I'm filling in for the great LD. He's just a jet setter now, you know. Laurie Daly, he's in Singapore. He's doing this, he's doing that. And I get the call. I say, mate, you got to fill in for Loz. So he's, I don't know if he knows how much I actually, you know, I love him and I help him out a lot.
Yeah, you feel you. Running short balls off him, mate.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly. But I do enjoy it, mate. And, yeah, happy to be. I don't think we've ever been a dynamic duo together, have we?
I think we might be on debut together, just on our Pat Malone.
Good
block. Blocker will be in with us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, mate, you're not going to get too much stepping from me. I'll be just running straight.
What would you be? If you were to play in the NRL, what position would you be, you know? No, it's...
Oh, well, it'd be certainly in the forwards.
In the forwards. I reckon a bit
love
of
to wear the 13 jersey.
I was about to say there that. You go. Ball playing lock.
Until I drop it. We got plenty of news this morning. We've got footy tonight as well. The Roosters up against the Melbourne Storm at Allianz Stadium in the AFL. St Kilda up against the Western Bulldogs. We've got Champions League on this morning as well. And some massive games. Second leg quarterfinals. Gee. Real Madrid have scored early against Manchester City. So they're up 4-3 on aggregate. And Bayern Munich and Arsenal is scoreless, and that's 2-2 on aggregate. So we'll keep an eye on those games this morning as well. We've got some great guests on, and we've got big news at the Panthers as well. But before we get to all this, the Sydney Derby, you were an honoured guest of Sydney FC there last Saturday night at Allianz Stadium. Could you have gone to a more dramatic game? Tell us about your experience going back to... You know, amongst the Sydney FC faithful, as you did throughout your teenage years
in particular.
When you were there, you know, prominent in the Cove. Take us through your experience back there at Allianz as the Wanderers equalised in deep into stoppage time, and then Jaden Kaczarski gave Sydney FC the latest of winners.
Let's just say it brought back some amazing childhood. Teenhood memories, and I think I carried on even more when he scored that second goal. But yeah, thanks to Sydney FC for having us out there at the game, and what a game! It was actually perfect. You know, it was nil all for a while, and I was with my mates, and they were like, "Oh, because they're footy heads."
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, "Oh,
something happened."
This is why I don't like soccer, yeah. But I actually still enjoy it. You know, like just they're athletes, aren't they? They're constantly running and just very very fit, and then it just bang, 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 goal, goal, goal. And we may or may not have had a little wager on it as well, which made it even better. So great night. And yeah, I actually loved it. And the fans are unbelievable. They honestly, I know, you know, the footy fans, they're very passionate, but the soccer fans, they're getting more and more like over in England. They just don't stop.
Yeah.
The whole time, like that was probably the best thing to watch. Like the game was a bit stale at the start and stuff, but obviously a cracker at the end. But just watching the crowd, I don't know how they got so much energy. They just never stopped. So yeah, it was a great experience.
Yeah, awesome. And I'm glad you had a little win too, because that would have been a tough watch.
It was.
It's not a bet unless you sweat, as we say, Grubby.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely.
But this big news at Penrith yesterday, that the club had granted James Fisher-Harris a release from the final 2 years of his contract on compassionate grounds to sign with the Warriors, who, let's face it, look like they're an absolute juggernaut now. To get Fisher-Harris, 4-year contract from next season, fills the void, of course, left by Adam Fanua-Blake, who leaves at the end of this season and heads back east. Well, on the east coast of Australia to play with the Sharks. He's the New Zealand captain now, Fisher-Harris, 28 years of age, Golden Boot Award winner, triple premiership player, mammoth signing for the Warriors. It was a shock for everyone. Usually these things get out, and they didn't.
And you know what, Mino? I'm actually happy it didn't. Like, it just shows that you can do it without someone leaking something or someone. It's actually really good from both clubs, and I love it. So moving forward, you know, what it does is it doesn't get the Penrith players thinking about it. It doesn't get the Warriors players thinking about it. It gets the right people, the upstairs, who sort of that type of stuff, contracts and whatnot. It gets them just talking it behind closed doors. And that's what I love. It doesn't affect the footy season and whatnot. And wow, biggest signing in Warriors history.
Yeah.
Easy.
Well, there you go.
Easy. I just think it's, you know what I love? I heard the reason, a bit of the reason why he wants to do this is because he's obviously the New Zealand captain.
Mm.
And he really wants to go over there, play for the Warriors, play for New Zealand, and lead his country. Like, that's amazing. Mm. For the culture, for the game, for everyone involved. Like, for the Warriors, wow. Who do they turn into now? Honestly. It's obviously...
Yeah. The way it all attract players as well.
Massive middle.
Yeah. That's the thing for me. Like, now people are like, well, Fisher Harris is there. And Sean Johnson, well, he's a year-to-year proposition with his contract situation. You're going around again, aren't you? Provided you're, you know, fit and healthy and playing decent footy, which he is again, mm-hmm. as he did last year. So you want to play in that team, don't you? If you're a player, potentially a free agent.
He's not missing out on that one, Middo.
Yeah.
He's done all the hard yards, you know. He was there, he left, he's come back, and the Warriors have been great. But this will take him to the next level. James Fisher-Harris will absolutely take the Warriors to the next level. And obviously, Andrew Webb's had a lot to do with this. He was at Penrith and must have had a really good relationship with Fisher-Harris. And obviously, Stacey Jones is the New Zealand coach now. So just a great, great signing for a country that is on the brink. And I know this is a big call, but I think we might be on the way to taking over the All Blacks.
Oh, gee, hang on.
I know it's a big call, but mate, look at rugby league.
There's no doubt. Bulldog was on about this yesterday.
Mm.
There's no doubt that they're the flavour of the month over in New Zealand, and they're capitalising on. Oh, there's fatigue with Super Rugby in New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
but the All Blacks are the All Blacks.
Yeah, fair call.
But you know, Kiwis are jumping on board all over the country over there with the Warriors because they're great to watch.
Yep.
The atmosphere is awesome. And as I said, there's a bit of fatigue in Super Rugby, and that's a whole different issue for rugby to figure out is the best format for Super Rugby in both Australia and New Zealand. But while that's going on in the background with rugby, the Warriors are just capturing the imagination of the people there because they're winning and playing great footy.
Do you think, you know, if it, say the Warriors obviously have another massive year, you have to have a big year this year, Fisher Harris gets over there and just takes them to another level, does this give New Zealand a big chance of having another NRL team?
Well, again, Bulldog pondered this yesterday. I just think for a while, just let's embrace the Warriors.
Yeah, fair call.
Because we've seen this before with them. We've seen them have, you know, great moments. They've made two grand finals and then they have periods of mediocrity. I can just capitalise right now on the Warriors' success all around the country, make them just a consistent juggernaut, the Melbourne Storm going forward. Whereas, you know, if you put in a team too quickly over there, do you dilute it too quickly? I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear from, you know, Kiwis over in particularly the South Island, because he'd naturally put the second team in a place like Christchurch on the South Island to have that distance with Auckland. And generally, I know in rugby terms, North and South Island, there is a big rivalry in New Zealand. So, yeah, it's a question that will be thrown up for sure to capitalise. How do you capitalise on this? But I just reckon for a period of time, leave it alone. And for one, they've got to win a premiership. Now there's expectation, isn't there,
Grant? Yeah, there is. Absolutely.
Fisher-Harris there next year, and providing again how they go at the back end of this year, they'll be close to premiership favourites next year.
Absolutely.
Very close to, if not favourites.
Yeah, have to be.
Hmm.
And then on the flip side, massive loss for Penrith.
Oh.
And I know they've lost, and everyone's speaking about it doesn't matter. They've lost, you know, Critter, Kicks, Birdo, all these players. But Fisher-Harris is a different level. He is the best front rower in the game now. He leads. Everyone says Nathan Cleary leads that team, and he does. But Fisher-Harris is the leader in that amongst that forward pack who are the best pack in the game. They work for each other unconditionally. He's going to leave a massive hole. And I think unless another Fisher Harris comes through, and look, there might be one in the ranks of Penrith, but he's going to leave a big hole in that Penrith
team. I've done a list of the players that have left Penrith from their last three grand final winning teams. Flying Fish, Props, Shock Shift is the headline on the back page of the Telegraph. This is Penrith's last dance, 72 hours to land the big fish. So big story naturally, and lots of articles about it today. And okay, Grubby, so since their 2021 grand final win, Penrith have lost Stephen Crichton, Matt Burton, Jerome Luai as of next year, Appy Coruscant, James Fisher-Harris as of next year, Kirk Capel, Billy Kickow, Spencer Lenu, other names, the likes of Paul Momorowski, Tyrone May, Brent Naden, Charlie Staines, Jamin Semin, Jack Cogger. Could Sunia Taruva be next as well? It's indicated that, well, you know, this could help as far as, you know, freeing up money for him, but it's where you want to spend your money, of course, as well, with Taruva being an outside back. But that is some list, isn't it? And straight away, reports indicating the club will target the West Tigers, Stefano Toikamanu, whose contract there. Now, this is an interesting one with his contract, as it's been widely reported in the last 12, 24 hours, that basically his contract for next year is triggered by either the Tigers making the eight or him playing two Origin games for New South Wales. Interesting one. Some of these clauses get into contracts, I don't know.
I've never heard of that.
This is what the bottom teams go through, is managers, in the interest of their clients, put it on, well, if you want him, you got to deliver for him, and we're putting these, you know, measures in the contracts. Like, you could never imagine a Penrith and Melbourne Storm allowing these sort of clauses in the contracts.
No chance.
But, you know, I guess teams like the Tigers in recent times, they probably do allow these just to get the player on their books, don't they? So, it'll be interesting to see what happens there with the Toikamanu, but he's also, other clubs are really circling him as well with the knowledge of these clauses. But even a Toikamanu, it's not yet filling the void, is it, to be left by James Fisher-Harris?
No. I'm not going to say nowhere near, but different type of player.
He's been good so far this year. Great. In particular.
No, he's been great, but this is just going to leave a gaping hole. And look, they'll get someone. They'll get a big feat, like 100%. Like, people will still want to go to Penrith because they know they know it's a great system. And the one thing that Penrith have always got as well, they're all from, you know, NRL all the way down to Harold Matz. They've got a great system. They're always churning through the players, and then they find one. And I'm a part of the flag with Josh Jackson at the moment for the Dogs, and played Penrith flag the other day. They're all the same. They play the same. They got the same communication on the field. It's methodical.
Who won?
We lost, unfortunately. But yeah, it's going to be a massive loss. But look, for me, Fisher-Harris moving from the Warriors and seeing all those, sorry, to the Warriors and seeing all those players go, it's just, isn't it unbelievable how the NRL works now and the salary cap? Like, the names you just mentioned there, Mido, like,
they're like rep players, if not just high quality first graders.
Some of the best in their positions.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Stephen Crichton's easily the best defensive centre in the game. Appy Coruscant at the moment is one of the best hookers in the game. Kickow's playing out of his skin at the Bulldogs. Like, it's just unbelievable. Mm. And it's Ivan's probably just sitting there going, wow. do you think someone like Ivan would be, when all this is happening, you're obviously happy for them to get better, like bigger contract, better opportunities. But deep down, he's got to go, gee, I wish I could have more. Mm. Just stay.
You got to give credit to the Panthers, though, because they clearly just haven't given any indication of standing in Fisher-Harris's way. He's approached the club and gone, look, I want to move home to New Zealand. He was under contract next year and the year after. So that's big for the Panthers. The Panthers could have dug their heels in.
Mm.
but out of respect to someone who's been, you know, one of the mainstays of their three premierships, they just have gone, rightio, go for it, basically.
Mm. That's it's the utmost respect you can get from a club, I reckon, Mido. Very rare that would happen. Without nothing getting out.
Mm.
Without no one even saying Fisher Harris has asked for a release. Mm. Seeing Fox everywhere. It's all over the shop. And then but look at what he's done. Got him three premierships. This era of the Penrith dominance, you know, he's laid the platform. So good on both parties, as we said before. It was a nice, clean transfer.
On the text line, they will promote from within, and then in 2 years' time, the kid that gets promoted will be the best front rower you've ever seen, because Penrith, says Jesse from the Gong. I don't think we'll be surprised of that, the way they've just been able to... Well, it's like, you know, it's just a factory, isn't it? They just keep producing quality and talent. Hey, lads, all those players that have moved on from Penrith, does that just show the dominance in general of Cleary Jr. and Senior? Ask Smitty. Well, it indicates the stability it gives them, that's for sure, and the confidence it gives the club in general. You do have to take, like, you know, we always talk about Bellamy, Bennett. I mean, Ivan Cleary is probably underrated now in that regard and shouldn't be. Triple premiership and dealing with this sort of turnover.
Absolutely.
Should never be understated, obviously, his impact and influence.
The system that he's got, it's unbelievable. Like, you look at, and that's the thing, Nathan, and this just proves how good Nathan is, because whenever he's in a game, he's always in full control, and he must just be dictating to everyone on the field where to go, what to do. But then on the outskirts of it, you've got Ivan and all his coaching staff making sure every single person on that field knows their job, exactly what to do. Because that's the thing, Penrith never look confused. Even when Nathan Cleary doesn't play, in comes Cogger, in comes, you know, all these players that have come through, the backup half, Sean O'Sullivan, mate, they play out of their skin. Absolutely out of their skin in such a good system. So you've got to take your hat off to them.
Craig says, Mido, keep an eye out for Preston Ricky. Next big thing out of Penrith, says Craig. So he's an interesting. I saw some commentary on this yesterday. Morning, boys. Do you really think the Warriors are gaining more than this year, considering Adam Fanua Blake is leaving? I'd say Adam Fanua Blake is better, in my opinion, says Boy Bunny. And there's no doubt it's in the conversation as far as, well, Adam Fanua Blake's in the conversation for best prop in the game. But Fisher Harris being the New Zealand captain and the aura that brings to going to the Warriors. And I ask you this. Out of Fanua Blake and Fisher Harris, you got to pick one of them to play for your life. I'm picking Fisher Harris. I remember you always used to pick Steve Waugh. We spoke about this in cricket. Who'd bat for your life? Oh, Steve Waugh.
Oh, man. For me, like you said, you could put them both and compare.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Fanua Blake's a star, for sure.
But what you just said is a great point. Yeah. What he brings to the Warriors, the actual Warriors. Fisher Harris goes to the St. George Dragons, it's not the same. That's a great call what you just said, but what he's going to do for that club, for that country, he wants to lead his country to the next World Cup win. That's massive.
Interesting on putting, you pondered whether, you know, you put a second team, you know, in New Zealand soon. Gav says, boys, my wife's family lives in Christchurch. I travel there regularly. All they talk to me about is league and how they want a team. Starved of footy all year round with the Crusaders, only playing games that wrap up mid-year compared to league. Also want to stick it to the North Island by having their own side. So that's Gav. Bit of perspective over there for someone who goes to Christchurch. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out with the expansion, of course, on the horizon, but it seems like the PNG path is... where the game's going to go because of government money. Great to have you company on the Big Sports Breakfast on Thursday, April 18. Josh Reynolds in with us this morning. Loz will be back tomorrow. Pup, well, when does the IPL finish? Seriously, it just drags on and on over there in India. But great to have you in this morning, Grubby. We'll have Blocker in with us in an hour's time. Champions League, now these massive quarterfinals, second legs this morning. And it's early in the second half in both matches. Bayern Munich and Arsenal is scoreless in Germany. So it's still 2-2 on aggregate, all to play for there for a spot in the final four. And the news in Manchester at the Etihad is that Rodrigo scored after 12 minutes for Real Madrid. So they're 1-0 up on the day and 4-3 up on aggregate. So it's a tense 40 minutes plus stoppage time remaining in both times, possibly more. Love to see him go to Pens.
Love Pens, Minnow.
Yeah, love Pens when it's not your team.
Do you want Man City to win?
Oh, gee, there's a clearance just there from Real Madrid. City, you got them under siege at the moment. Nah, probably not.
No.
Probably not. Not that I love Madrid either, but, you know, City, nah.
They've had enough. They've had enough trophies.
Yeah, all that cash that they've got to spend.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Oh, seriously.
Like Loz.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wonder what class he flew to Singapore. We'll get a full update on his return.
Was he paying?
What do you know? No. Well, I'm assuming not.
If he was paying, he'd be first class.
No, I don't think he would if he was paying. No. Pup would.
Yeah, easy. He'd be the Emirates one where you get a bed and
forking out the gazillions for first class. But would certainly ask, if others are paying, would certainly ask for an upgrade.
Mm, just a sneaky one. Go up to the desk. Nice. You know, he's really... He'd go up to the lady.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hey, how you going?
Any chance? Yeah. Talk, just sweet talk.
Is that Laurie Daly? Yeah, it's me.
13-53-53 on the open line, 0419-767-272. Boarding boys, now that Penrith have the funds after Fish leaves, do you think they'd top up Jerome Luai and he does a DCE backflip? What are your thoughts? Cheers, George. I mean, you'd never rule anything out because we've seen it all, haven't we? With and you mentioned the DCE situation all those years ago at the Gold Coast Titans. Oh, I think we'd be shocked, wouldn't we, if we saw Jerome Luai backflip. Salary cap management is so important. Like, they'll want to spend that money probably in that same position. But it depends. Like others have pointed out, there might be some young bucks coming through who they think they can fill the void, which we've seen throughout that squad over the last, 4 years?
Absolutely. You're right, though. It's a possibility. But then, like you said, Mido, if they free up, they've freed up some cash now, who do they go for? I know we're all thinking a front rower because it's like for like, but maybe they could go after
a half.
A half. Mm. You never know. Who have they got penciled in? It's
still got Cleary there, though, don't you?
That's all you need sometimes. But you just, it wouldn't surprise me.
We got Harry. G'day, Harry. How are you?
Good, mate. When your team makes four grand finals, the salary cap's working when other teams take all the talent. That's how it works.
This is true. Yeah.
This is true. But, however, when Roosters won three comps, I can't remember their team getting split up the Penrith team. I think that you agree that the Roosters obviously have their ways.
Oh, well, that's your opinion. I'm not going to go saying we don't sit here with no evidence saying anything untoward, but that that's your opinion, Harry.
Well, look at the Penrith team. I mean, all their stars are gone. And so they should, because they should earn the top possible money they can achieve because they're superstars. Four grand final. Roosters, nah, mate, don't care. They don't play fair ball, fair game.
That's your opinion, Harry. I remember Latrell left. I'd have to go back through their side. They have, over a period of time kept a lot of players together. But, I'm just going back to their 2019 side in the grand final. Tedesco, Daniel Tupou, Joey Manu, Brett Morris was on the wing. He's, long out of the game now. Latrell, as we mentioned, Keary, Cooper Cronk retired. Maria Hargreaves, obviously a stalwart. Verrill's off to the Gold Coast. Isaac Liu's not with them anymore, so... I don't know. Radley's there. Orbison retired. He wouldn't have been on big money throughout his career. So,
Mr. Fix It.
That's the narrative with the Roosters in, pub chat, but is it reality?
Isn't it funny? It's all, you always hear it. Do you reckon Nick Politis sits? I think he, I reckon he loves it.
I reckon it'd annoy the hell out of him.
Oh, you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, because he probably, well, he does, if he's doing the exact right thing by the books, as he, I'm assuming he definitely would, he'd probably be like, what do you mean? I'm just good at what I do. And that's what it is. People will try and, I suppose, knock you down a peg if you are going well. So
they clearly love playing at that club. The players, they don't lose too many, do they? Like, let's face it, you do take some unders to stay at clubs. At clubs like that, you see players do it.
When it's got a culture like that, you know, and you, and as we were speaking about before, you know, speaking about Penrith losing all these players, and you know, they've lost a massive roster, but there will be players that if they get poached by Penrith, straight away they will be like, what a system. And that's what it's about, the system. It's not just about the club, it's about the system, the culture, the people who have been there. There's a lot that goes into wanting to sign someone.
I'll give you an example. I met him a few times. Someone like Luke Garner, he jumped at the opportunity to go to Penrith. And I'm pretty sure he is on less there than what he was on at the Tigers. So, you know, to be a part of that system and to, you know, for that, for him personally, to improve his game. So, anyway. Go for it.
What I hear about Penrith a lot, it's for, like you said, a guy like Garner. I played with Garns at the Tigers, and great guy. All the skill, like very good player, but going to somewhere like Penrith, being in a system like that, it would force you to create good habits in your game, because a lot of the time players come through can do all the big plays, Silky, this, that, but they teach you the habits that you need to be a successful player for a long period of time. When to tie in, when to kick chase, make sure that's in the front of your mind, and then all the other stuff will come off the back of it. So you understand, perfect example, why like Lukey Garner would want to go there.
Just on Loza, tried for an upgrade. The woman said she's been backing his multi, so no way I'm letting you on. Says old mate from your minor. So there you go. That was at the airport, according to old mate from your minor. Okay, we're going to take a break. Evan Priest is coming up to talk some golf. How about this, though? This is ahead of the RBC Heritage. It's a big tournament on the PGA Tour this week, of course, and comes very close after the Masters. But just seeing on social media that, well, viewership in the States on CBS was down 20% from last year in the Masters on Sunday. So it'll be interesting to get some of Evan's thoughts about that, because, yeah, with the obviously the split with LIV and the PGA Tour, perhaps players that don't really, you know, have the charisma that we've seen of other champions and what that's doing for the game at the moment. G'day, Evan. How are you, mate?
Very good, Bino. Very good. Just putting the final preparations on. Come back to Australia tonight, so just coming down from a pretty epic Masters week, wrapping up some US stuff and then coming home, mate, so it's all going well.
Nothing better is there than that flight into, well, Sydney in particular, over the harbour. Just warms the heart, doesn't it? But let's talk Masters fallout. And I was just seeing that the CBS ratings in the States, Evan, down 20%, at least with Sunday, year on year. So down 20% from last year. What do you make of all that?
I think into the bigger picture, you know, I think that overall interest in pro golf, watching pro golf at least, is declining, not only with the fracturing of LIV Golf and the PGA Tour, but also just the viewership model is kind of changing. People are consuming YouTube golf as just the biggest thing in the world. These blokes are making literally hundreds of thousands of dollars per month just going to tour players' home courses, filming really cool behind-the-scenes content with them, having matches against these pros in their own kind of candid settings. And I think just, you know, over time, you know, ratings are declining. The really concerning thing is the Masters is sort of held as this buffer zone between everything else that's going on in pro golf. All the PGA Tour events are down this year, particularly the Players' Championship, which is one of the big ones that's not a major. And we always sort of think that the Masters is going to be a safety blanket. And for that to be down 20% from last year and the lowest since 2021, it's pretty concerning. Very, very concerning. It kind of speaks to the shift in the way people are watching golf and the fact that there's just no
real marketable stars, really. Yeah. You know, like ever since, basically Cam Smith, you know, you've got to have two things in pro golf to be a big star. You've got to be a good player to the results to back it up. And you have to have a hook. And you know, 2 years ago, Cam Smith had a hook. It was the mullet. He was the Aussie who didn't give an F and was just your beer-drinking Queenslander with a nice mullet. And he was winning and putting better than anyone else on the planet and winning majors. So Scotty Scheffler, great player, but just doesn't have that hook that people can get into. And all the broadcasters all week were just, you know, basically saying it was a fait accompli that he was going to win the Masters. And I think people just tuned out. Like, they just saw the one-shot lead after 54 holes and just said, ah, he's going to win it. Probably no point watching golf tomorrow. So, yeah, a little bit concerning.
Yeah, just I want to read you this text from Ringers. This is probably more, I'd say, for people outside of America. But Ringer says, I've seen some commentary around the Masters coverage and some punters not happy with the vision bias shown towards certain golfers. Maybe had viewers switching off. It is infuriating at times, though, isn't it? How it does seem they just sit on two or three players for long periods of time.
Yeah, Mido, that's a really good point. You know, the CBS producers and whatnot, CBS is the main broadcaster of the Masters, basically always has been, and they pick their favourites. And, you know, they're usually the quintessential American players, your Jordan Spieth, your Xander Schauffele's, now Scotty Scheffler is your, you know, all-American Texan. And sometimes that's kind of offside with what the viewer wants. The viewer wants a bit of a snapshot of every player on the course. And even Max Homer, who's quite a big star, they're not showing really enough of him. You know, he hasn't cracked that superstar mold yet where they base their numbers on what they think the viewers want, and they still haven't got it right. And I'd 100% agree with that pun of it. You know, you absolutely got to show more than just Xander Schauffele and Scotty Scheffler. There's got to be more to it.
I've got an idea, boys. Why don't we send Scotty Scheffler to a weekend away with Conor McGregor to spice him up a bit? And then, you know, then people might want to watch him. Imagine him walking on the course with the Conor McGregor walk.
I couldn't think of two blokes more different, probably.
Throw him in a pub and see what happens. Now, even on a serious note, mate.
Talking cheap.
Rory McIlroy has denied rumours. He's possibly going to Live Golf for $850 million. Was there any possibility that could have happened, mate?
Zero, Josh. Absolutely zero. You know, like, if of all the players, and I'm at a point where nothing in this Live Golf PGA Tour divide would surprise me, you know, particularly after John Rahm went, that was a real bell ringer. But more, Rory McIlroy is the one who I can confidently bet the house on that would absolutely not go to Live. He cares too much about, you know, his legacy and what people think of him. He's self-aware of how much he's, you know, been vocal against Live Golf. He's previously said if it was the only professional golf tour in the world, he would retire. He literally said that word for word. So these reports, you know, like the English rumour mill is just crazy, and it was never going to happen. I do believe that Rory is open to discussions, and he probably has had discussions with some of the heads of the public investment fund, which finances Live Golf. Like he met with Yasser Al-Ramayan in Dubai, I believe it was late last year, and had a chat with him. But in terms of he in his mind, sees the public investment fund and Live Golf as two separate things, and he's hoping to encourage some of that investment, but he doesn't want a bar of Live Golf, and that was just a ridiculous rumor. $850 million US dollars, mind you. So what's that, about 1.4 billion Aussie?
Wow.
So, yeah, definitely not happening, and it's kind of unfortunate that he had to come out and squash those rumors, but that's the rumor mill these days with all these tracker accounts that follow Live Golf and whatnot, just start perpetuating it, start snowballing, and it gets to a point where the player has to deny it. So, yeah, it's a weird situation.
There was some talk about the Australian Open, and was it for the winner to be given exemptions to the majors that was chat around Augusta the other day?
Exactly, Mido. It was a guy called Paul McGinley, who was a winning European Ryder Cup captain, famous Irish player, you know, one of the really good players back in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, and it was one of those great ideas that I thought, how has someone not come up with that sooner? It's kind of a bit of a magic bullet, you know. One of the biggest problems in pro golf at the moment is that A, the best players in the world aren't getting together anymore that often, and B, Live golfers who have a fair income case to be in the majors, but the majors are based off the world rankings. They don't get world ranking points on Live, so therefore their world ranking is plummeting. And it's kind of this magic bullet solution where you would take a select couple of national opens around the world, Australia included, and you would just say, look, the winner of this is getting start in all four majors next year. It would mean for the Australian Open that we would suddenly get these incredible fields. We're talking about superstars like Bryson DeChambeau. Next year is his last year where he's eligible for all of the majors based off his 2020 US Open win. You get guys like him coming down to Australia and going, yep, I'll play in Melbourne, I'll play in Sydney. And if I win, I get into all four majors next year. Don't have to worry about all that kind of arduous travel. And at the same time, there would be no excuse for live golfers who complain that they're not in the majors, because the option would be there for anyone to travel around the world, win those tournaments, to get in the four majors. So it would kind of be a win-win for everyone. And an incredible idea. I spoke to the CEO of Golf Australia, James Sutherland, ex-Cricket Australia CEO, who was at the Masters, and I spoke to him on the 13th hole. We nearly got hit by a stray ball during the interview, and he encouraged it. He said, you know, we welcome these kind of ideas because it would boost our event, our tour, and it would sort of help solve some of those problems that exist in golf at the moment, and everyone would win. And God, I hope it happens, because it'd be incredible.
Evan, the women's first major of the year is about to tee off, the Chevron Championship. Have we got any Aussies going around in that, mate?
We do, Josh. We've got actually a record for this tournament, a number of Aussies. We've got 9 Australian women. The Australian women's game is so healthy at the moment. It's arguably doing much better than the men. We've got Minji Lee, the world number 5, and she's up. Yeah, it's really tough to be in the top world rankings at the moment because there's a few players who are playing outstanding golf, including world number 1, Nelly Korda. But Minji Lee's really kicking some ass overseas. She's world number 5. She spearheads the contingent. And we've got Hannah Green, who's won a major as well. She's from Perth. So really doing, and we've got, you know, some young players coming through, like Gabby Ruffles, the younger sister of a pro called Ryan Ruffles. So they're playing the first major of the season for the women. That'll be a really exciting event in Texas, and we'll sort of see how our Aussie girls go.
Okay, Hilton Head, they're in South Carolina, the RBC Heritage, and once again, Scotty Scheffler is short. He was $5.50 heading into the Masters. He's $5 with Tab. Heading into this tournament, how are we playing it with Schauffele at 11, Åberg? How good was he in the Masters at 13, 15 and longer the rest? What bets have you got for us here, Evan?
Yeah, really good question, Mido. We've got Scotty Scheffler. I find it really surprising that it was someone who was saying that he would pull out of the Masters for his wife to give birth would then go and play the tournament the following week. But anyway, no one really ever wins the Masters in the week after that. So I'm definitely looking at Shane Lowry. He's had 3 top 10 finishes in 5 years at Hilton Head, the famous Harbourtown Golf Links with the lighthouse on the 18th. He's a really good, you know, horses for courses bet there. I also really like, I had a bit of a mental blank there. Basically, Shane Lowry is one that I'm sort of looking at to win, looking at the top 10. His odds are quite good there. And your top Aussie is Cam Davis. And also Matt Fitzpatrick. Yeah, sorry, that was who I was blanking on. Matt Fitzpatrick from England, really good player, US Open champion. His odds are pretty decent for the defending champion. And this is a real place of comfort for him. His family used to take the family from England over on vacation in Hilton Head Island in South Carolina every summer. So it's a real happy place for him. So I sort of can't decide who I'm going to go with top 10, who I'm going to win. But I basically back both to win and top 10. There'd be some decent odds there. And then you go with Cam Davis for your top Aussie.
Okay, love it. So Matt Fitzpatrick, Shane Lowry for your wins and top 10s. Cam Davis, top Aussie. Cam Davis, $51 to win the tournament as well. And in that top Aussie market, well, it's only he and Jason Day. And, Day's $1.85 Davis, and Davis is $1.90. But maybe Cam Davis has some top 10 action there as well. Mate, thank you so much. Safe travels home.
Thank you, Mido. Thank you, Josh. And I'll speak to you guys next week.
De Bruyne has scored. City have equalised in the Champions League quarterfinal, second leg this morning. Gee, they needed that one. So it is 1-1 on the day at the Etihad and 4-4 on aggregate. Look at the crowd there. Just like Grubby with the Sydney FC fans in the Sydney Derby last Saturday night. So 4-4 on aggregate. And... in the other match, Bayern Munich have gone ahead of Arsenal. Kimmich has scored after 63 minutes. So it is 3-2 on aggregate. Bayern ahead in your Champions League this morning. Now, the Olly Roos play tonight. I'm just trying to find a market for it. No, I can't find it at the moment. I'm sure one will open this morning, though. So the Olly Roos play at 11 p.m. tonight, Eastern Standard Time. A virtually must win against Indonesia at the under-23 Asian Cup. And we have to finish top three at this tournament to automatically qualify for the Paris Olympics. And coming off a scoreless draw against Jordan in the first game. Just other results around. Alex Demonor, the Aussie, well, in front of a very partisan crowd, has beaten Rafael Nadal in Nadal's second game back from injury at the Barcelona Open. So he would have silenced the crowd there in Barcelona, beating Nadal. Well done, Demonor. 7-5, 6-1. He's through to the round of 16 of that tournament, as is Aussie Jordan Thompson as well. Just in swimming, gold medalist Kayleigh McEwen, she broke Stephanie Rice's 14-year-old Australian record in the 200 metres individual medley last night on the Gold Coast at the Australian Open Championship. So she's just a star, obviously. Won, 100 and 200 backstroke, I think it was, in Tokyo, gold medal, and then won in the medley relay, a gold medal as well. So triple gold medalist at Tokyo. And she's adding the 200 IM to her program heading towards Paris. And so she's set to battle Canadian Summer McIntosh, emerging teenage star in swimming. And that will be some contest in the 200 IM heading towards Paris between those two swimmers. So Kayleigh McEwen flying there. And the Olympic trials are in June in Brisbane. Gee, not far away, is it, the games coming up. Just in the NBA yesterday as well, the Golden State Warriors, well, it seems their golden era is done. They lost 118-94 in the play-in against Sacramento yesterday, so that ends the Warriors' season, and it looks like the end for Klay Thompson at the Warriors as well. He's a free agent now. 0 points, 0 for 10 from the field yesterday, Klay. In his prime, one of the deadliest shooters of all time in the NBA.
He's lighting that game up yesterday, if in his prime.
Oh, well.
Where's he going, Mido? Any?
Oh, no idea. A team that needs a shooter, obviously. There's probably just one shooter away from being a contender. So, there could be a multitude of teams. But the Warriors, you'd think that's it. It probably gets a bit of a teardown. 4 titles in 10 years. And the 3 players that have been involved in all of them, Steph, Clay and Draymond Green. So it looks like change will be coming there. They were barely holding on all season, had a couple of decent patches even late in the season there, just look after it looked like they were gone. Got back into the play-in, but reality bit them yesterday. And in the other match, the Lakers beat the New Orleans Pelicans. So the Lakers are the 7th seed and will face Denver in the Western Conference in the first round. What a series that's going to be. The Lakers yesterday, 110-106, despite 40 points from Zion. Zion Williamson was absolutely superb, but he went off injured with the game on the line with 3 minutes remaining and reportedly has a hamstring injury, and he's unlikely to play in the battle for the 8th seed, the one-and-done match against the Sacramento Kings that New Orleans have coming up. But what is locked in is Denver up against the Lakers. Jared Daffy, I'm sure, will join us shortly and tell us about the Eastern Conference play-in games today and the markets for that one as well. Just in the AFL tonight as well, St Kilda have got the Western Bulldogs at Marvel Stadium. We'll have Josh Kennedy on the show after 8 o'clock this morning. Swans champion to preview the round in the AFL. Crucial game too. Both teams have had 2 and 3 starts. Gee, the Dogs are under some pressure in particular. A lot of pressure on their coach, Luke Beveridge. Now, their forward, Jamara Ugal-Hagan, he's out for personal reasons, replaced by Rory Lobb. And Beveridge resisted bringing Caleb Daniel, a former premiership player and All-Australian as well, dropped into the VFL. And despite Tom Liberatore being out due to concussion, no Caleb Daniel. And for the Saints, forward Max King, he's out with a knee injury. And Zach Jones is back in for them. I think we've got Daff ready to join us. Stuart Duffy from Tab. A very good morning, mate. How are you?
Morning, Mido. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Morning, Josh.
Let's start with this game tonight. The Roosters and the Storm at Allianz Stadium. I'm guessing this will be a very tight market.
It is, actually. At various stages this week, both sides have been favourites, but it's gone back to where it started from. It's $1.90, take your pick. Not surprisingly, it's a huge betting game. But yeah, $1.90, take your pick at the moment. Probably more interest in the Roosters, just over Melbourne. So we'll see what develops during the day.
Tough game to tip, Grubby.
It is a tough one. I don't know, you know, where to go, but whenever they play, it's a cracker. I know that much. And in the AFL, mate, the Saints take on the Dogs.
Yeah, well, Mido just went through the ins and out, or the outs for both of these sides, and I don't know. I'm surprised the Western Bulldogs haven't drifted further than what they have. Now, they were $2 yesterday. They're out to $2.05. St Kilda $1.80 into $1.77. It is interesting. You just touched on it, Mido. The pressure that the Western Bulldogs are under, more so the coach, with his the Bulldogs' performance over the last season or two. So a loss tonight might fast track his exit as well. But yeah, the Saints have been the money side in the last 24 hours, but it's a real dangerous game, that one.
Just want to touch on some more games in the AFL this weekend.
Great round, isn't it?
It's a cracking round of footy. And Carlton, of course, were upset by Adelaide there the other day. But huge game against GWS. This is the twilight game on Saturday at Marvel.
Mm. Yeah, it's in this day and age, it's rare to have a price up for a game that just doesn't move. And it's not because it's not popular. It's, you know, it's going to be a big one as well. But Carlton on Monday morning were $1.80. GWS were $2. So that hasn't changed. And pretty similarly with the early one on Saturday, an early start here for one of the matches of the round, Collingwood v Port. And Collingwood $1.77. Port $2.05 there. And the Swans are in action on Sunday, the early game Sunday. Now, there's been a bit of money here for the Gold Coast to surprise the Swans, although they're still $3.25. That's in from $3.40. Sydney $1.35. And the line's come in a couple of points, Mido. It's minus 19.5 in favour of Sydney.
I will declare I've put the Gold Coast Suns in a multi to make the eight this year. So I'm cheering.
Yeah, I backed them as well.
Fan. Did you? Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. Well, that gives me some
confidence.
Well, their
good's good, but unfortunately their bad is not very good at all. It mightn't be this year, but I think a premiership's not too far away.
Gee, a premiership. Oh.
Premiership not far away.
Gee. Brisbane Geelong as well. Just how's that game looking, Daff, in the AFL?
Well, you're getting a good price for a side that hasn't lost a game yet, that being Geelong. They've come in a little bit, 260 into 250. The Lions are at home, obviously, $1.53. The line has come in a couple of points as well. I think we go 13.5 start Geelong. It's into 11.5 points. So, yeah, it's a really good round. And I suppose one thing, these derbies in the West historically have been terrific matches, and quite often you get an upset. Now, it would require a fair bit for the Eagles to win, but they were good last weekend. They're $5.80, Fremantle $1.14, but the 33.5 start to West Coast at $1.90 looks attractive to me. Yeah.
Daff, in the NBA, the play-in games continue today. The 76ers taking on Miami and the Bulls versus the Hawks. Some cracker games there.
Yeah, there is, Josh. The early one, Philadelphia, were $1.54 for 2 days. They're into $1.46 this morning. Having said that, the two faves didn't fare so well yesterday. Miami at $2.80, a line there, 5.5 points. And in the second one, it hasn't really moved. Chicago $1.65, Atlanta $2.30. That line, 3 points in favour of the Bulls. You were talking about Sacramento, Mido. Those games are up. That one's Saturday. They're $1.85 favourites to beat New Orleans at $2. And the other one, Denver v. the Lakers. Denver $1.37. The Lakers $3.20. That line's 7 points.
That's game one, Sunday morning, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Barcelona Open, I mentioned that Alex de Minaur's through to the round of 16. Imagine playing Rafael Nadal in Barcelona.
Yeah, well, normally you'd think, well, he's a million to one pop, but he was actually, well, the market was pretty close. De Minaur was $2 and Nadal $1.80. And we know the issues Nadal has had. We don't have De Minaur's next matchup. That'll be open later this morning, but I thought I'd just have a quick look at the market to win the French Open. We've got Alcaraz, the fave there at 250, Djokovic 350, Sinner 4, Nadal at 6, Runa at 11. And just looking for our man Alex, $81.
Now we have feature racing, both on the East Coast and the West Coast, I guess, this week. When you think the Quokka as well over in the West, Very rich race. And the all-age, of course, is a classic Group 1 in Sydney.
Yeah, actually, that other race that's creating plenty of race, plenty of betting at Randwick is the Champagne Stakes. And when we put that market up yesterday, there wasn't much between Manal and Linebacker. But Manal's been the mover. 250 into 230. Linebacker pretty solid there at $7. The all-aged is race 8 on the program. Yep. And just looking down what we've done here.
Espiona should be at the top of betting there.
Yeah, but she's a little drift. She was 360. Yeah, she's out to 380. Sunshine in Paris after the barrier draw has been 6 into 460. Magic Time has been 11 into 950. And Southport Tycoon is solid at $6. And I'll just have a look at this race on Saturday. It's a big weekend in Perth. It's a trilogy. So tonight we've got a slot race at the Dogs.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, which has got 7 Victorians in the field, by the way. Tomorrow night, the slot race at the Trots. And, of course, we've got the Quokka on Saturday. And after the barrier draw in the final field, there's been good interest in Overpass, 550 into 460. King of Sparta has been 10 into 750. Bella Nipotina is getting out. She's 6. And Amelia's Jewel, I thought they might have rushed at her, but they haven't really. She's $3.20 still. And Oscar's Fortune, which has been racing pretty well, has been 8 into 6. So all of those races are open, including the one for the Greys and the Harness over in Perth, the slot races.
Awesome. Before you go, Daff, I might just get you to go back to the NRL for Grubby's Dogs, just based on this text. Hey, Grubby, I love my Knights, but how we are favourites against your Dogs on Sunday, I have no idea. We've been very competitive, but yeah, we definitely aren't top eight material. Been losing the ruck all season so far. Cheers. No name to that one, but what is the marker for that game?
They have been playing well, haven't they? I don't know what it is. They seem to be a forgotten side, but having said that, they have been a little move inwards. 205 into $2, the Knights $1.80, so not much in the market there. Chip?
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, boys, that there was a text here before. Another ambush?
How many ambushes can you have, mate? I don't think against the Knights at home is an ambush, well, right?
Every game's an ambush at the Dogs, mate.
Daff, thanks so much, mate. Have a great weekend as well.
See you, lads.
What is going on in this studio? Steve Roach is in the building, and we see him fired up. I don't think I've seen him like this.
He was throwing punches. I've never seen anyone throw punches
shut
like
up, boxing.
That. Yeah, at no one. It was unbelievable. There's something on his mind.
Yeah, he's coming up in about 20 minutes' time as we go through the whole round coming up in the NRL. And Adam Pengilly from the City Morning Herald is joining us. Morning, Adam. How are you?
Nicholas Boy's reincarnated the block. He's bringing back Laurie.
Yeah, the great Laurie Nichols as well.
Ah, yes, absolutely.
Now, big story yesterday, James Fisher-Harris. What did you make of it all? Signing with the Warriors for 4 years and being released from 2 years of his contract there at Penrith.
Yeah, not many things surprised me in rugby league anymore, Mido, but this one certainly snuck under the guard of a lot of people and came as a shock when the Panthers and the Warriors announced it around lunchtime yesterday. And to be fair, Mido, it all happened relatively quickly. James Fisher-Harris sort of went to Ivan Cleary on Sunday morning and sort of said, listen, this is what I'm thinking. I want to go back home to New Zealand with my family and I'm going to ask for a release from the club. And in most instances, I think clubs would probably stand pretty firm and say, well, mate, you're on close to $1 million a year. You're one of our best players. Why would we let you go? But just given the respect they have for James, what he's done for that club over many, many years now, and speaking to some people at Penrith yesterday, they suggested that they wouldn't have won 3 titles in a row without him. So the respect that he's generated from that club, they said, you know what, it's okay, you can do that. We're going to put your family first. So he decided to go home to New Zealand, and the Warriors have virtually had an absolute superstar land in their lap. And given what happened with Addison or Blake 6 months ago, boys, they released him on compassionate grounds to come back to Sydney in Australia next year. They've picked up arguably a better player, if not equal, at least potentially a better player in similar circumstances. So, geez, they're building into a really strong squad, aren't they, the Warriors, next year? And I think they'll go deep in the competition this year, and then next year, geez, they'll go close to, I reckon, starting the competition as premiership favourites.
Yeah, he's going to leave a massive hole in that Penrith team. I find it interesting, Adam, how I've spoken to a couple of journos from last night to this morning, and it's very, very rare that you guys don't have an inkling of anything. Does it hurt you, mate? Does it hurt you deep down that you didn't have a... You just didn't know something.
It hurts some. I don't think it
hurts. No, not you in general. I just mean a journalist.
I think as a cohort, when something like that happens and no one's really got a sniff of what's going on, you sort of think, wow, how did that happen? And probably deep down, maybe grubby, probably some people are wondering, how the hell did we not know about that? But that just goes to show the respect that Penrith had for James Fisher-Harris to get that done on the quiet in the space of, well, virtually 48 hours, really, maybe even 72. And so it all happened really, really quickly. It just gives you an insight into the respect that James has for Penrith as well. He actually called a meeting with Ivan Cleary first on Sunday morning, spoke to Ivan about what he was thinking, what he wanted to do, before he even told his own management. That just goes to speak volumes to the character that James Fisher-Harris is. And we all know, Josh, you've played against him for many years. He's a guy that doesn't say much, doesn't say anything at all virtually, but when he does speak, everyone listens.
Yeah, very, very respectful from both parties, the management and Penrith. The only time he does say something is on the Mad Mondays on stage. That's when he's at his best. But no, mate, a cracker of a game tonight. The bookies can't split them. The Roosters and the Storm. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, mate, I really struggle to figure out which way to go in this game, to be honest. I don't think we've quite seen the Roosters at their best so far this year. I know it's only early in the season, obviously, but they've been a little bit up and down, and I still go back to that game against Brisbane in Las Vegas. I thought they were awesome to start the season over there. I thought, okay, the Roosters in for a big year, but maybe just a couple of injuries and suspensions. They haven't quite hit their groove yet. And Melbourne, on the flip side, have been winning games, but you can hardly say they've been really convincing in their wins either. So I still can't quite get my head around his Cameron Munster injury. Like, he came out, I think, last week and said, you know what, I'm probably not going to be much more than 70 or 80% for the entire year. And that's got to be a big question mark, doesn't it? When arguably your best player is saying that this injury has caused him such grief that he doesn't know if he'll be back to 100% at any stage this year. So I've tipped Melbourne. I've tipped Melbourne boys, not with any great confidence. I think it'll be a really close game. I think Melbourne have conceded a lot of points in the last couple of weeks against Brisbane and the Bulldogs. I think they'll be back to their defensive best tonight, and I think they might be able to just squeak home in a close one.
Looking ahead to a great day's racing on Saturday, all-age stakes day. And just the champagne for the two-year-olds over the mile, the Group 1. And I think most punters will either be in the Manal or Linebacker camp here in their 230 and 270 respectively.
Yeah, I think they will be, Middo. And just, I suppose, hypothesising a little bit, if Manal wins this race on the weekend, she ends the carnival with two Group 1s. I suppose the question you've got to ask is she the two-year-old of the year? Given how well she ran in the slipper and she picks up a couple of Group 1s, it'd probably be hard to go past her, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
I generally try and defer to the Golden Slipper. Whoever wins the Golden Slipper, that's sure. The grand final. They should be the favourite for the two-year-old of the year. But given how unlucky she was in that race, and she's come out and won the size, obviously, and she wins the champagne on the weekend, she's going to have some pretty irresistible claim to be named two-year-old of the year. And I think also one thing that might go in her favour, and a lot of respect to Michael Friedman in the camp there, is that she's going to be the only horse that's running all three legs of the Triple Crown, the Slipper, the Size and the Champagne. Like, we always have attrition every year, obviously, with the two-year-olds, and she's the one that stood up the whole way through. So I think Linebacker's a dangerous rival. Like, we know that John O'Shea's taken the low road to get to this race. He's obviously kicked him off in a lowly Hawkesbury race in the Value, and then obviously all eyes are on this Champagne Stakes. Looks like a really smart move from the stable to just target this race. So, yeah, the market suggests it's a race in two. I can't really disagree at the moment. Probably a slight lean towards Manal to make it two Group 1s in the space of a couple of weeks.
And just also some news, well, some Sky Racing news. Caleb Nisbet set to retire as a jockey and join Sky Racing. 29 years old, of course, rode as Garter in the New Haven Park Country Championships final there, and an emotional win at Randwick on day one of the championships. She's ridden almost 600 winners and will finish up on Wagga Cup Day.
Yeah, how good,
Kayla Nisbet to join the team and conclude her career as a jockey. And, oh, gee, I saw Ben Mellon broke his leg as well.
I don't know what the actual reports were there, Middo, to be fair, because the initial reports that came through straight away was it was quite scary, saying he had a compound fracture in his leg. And then those reports were corrected shortly afterwards, saying that there was no compound fracture of the leg. There might just be just a leg break once he got taken to hospital. And then I saw some report very late last night suggesting there might not have been a break at all. So I think we need to get some more clarification on that this morning about Ben's condition. But obviously, it was quite a significant fall there yesterday, their midweek meeting down there in Melbourne. So let's just hope he's okay. He doesn't have any major injuries with that leg and getting back in the saddle in the not-too-distant future.
Well, he was booked to ride Malkovich in the Quokka.
Well, you think it's unlikely.
Oh, surely not. Surely.
Yeah. You think it would be extremely unlikely given his condition. Let's just hope he hasn't suffered a leg break there. And all the best and speedy wishes to Ben for recovery.
Indeed. Good on you, Adam. We'll chat tomorrow, mate.
Hey, boys.